On the Bookshelf with your host, Dave Doc Kirby.
We often hear about the courage and the valor of the Marines on the ground in the South Pacific during World War II and the Army. And we hear a lot about the Navy battles, but we don't really talk about, amazingly enough anymore, the men that flew off those flat tops and the men that flew off the hotly contested airfields that we either took from the Japanese or built on territory that we took from the Japanese during South Pacific War in World War II. Here to talk to us about his new book, Flyboy Heroes, the story of the Medal of Honor recipients of the air war against Japan. It's from Stackpole Books. James Hallis is a graduate of the Newhouse School at Syracuse University and was in the newspaper business nearly 40 years as reporter, editor, and publisher. He's the author of Saipan, The Battle of the Doomed Japan in World War II, which won the 2020 General Wallace M. Green Jr. Award for nonfiction, Uncommon Valor on Iwo Jima, the stories of the Medal of Honor recipients in the Marine Corps' bloodiest battle in World War II, Killing Ground on Okinawa, The Battle for Sugarloaf Hill, Doughboy War, The American Expeditionary Force in World War I, Squandered Victory, The Battle of St. Mihiel, and The Devil's Anvil, The Assault in Peleliu. And once again, his newest book is Flyboy Heroes, the stories of the Medal of Honor recipients of the air war against Japan. Jim, thanks so much for making time to talk to me on the Bookshelf today.
Well, thank you for asking me.
All the years that you've been in the newspaper business, I've been in the radio business, so we've been working on parallel tracks all these years, but obviously we have some real common interests. How did you first discover the stories of these brave men whose stories have heretofore not been told?
My interest in the military actually came as a baby boomer when, growing up, everyone's father had been in the war, so it was kind of a common theme for all of us. We were aware of World War II and all, which got me interested in that. And my father, a friend, had a golfing buddy whose life was saved on Saipan by a man who died and was awarded the Medal of Honor. He threw himself on a hand grenade. That kind of led me into looking into the Medal of Honor recipients, particularly for the Marine Corps, which is my main interest. That led me into the air war, and that led me into the Army and the Navy, too, to sort of see Marine flying experience compared with that of the naval aviators and the Army pilots and all.
And what did you find out? There certainly are a couple of people in your book who are familiar to me for one reason or another. And again, as a fellow baby boomer, I've heard about Pappy Boyington, not just because of the TV series, but also in the lead-up to that series, the information that was released. And my father-in-law fought in Europe during World War II, but I was also a pastor for many years, and many of my parishioners were involved in the Pacific War, and one of them was a pilot in a bomber. I did have some opportunities to learn more about that aspect of the war. So the Marines and the Army Air Corps guys and the Navy guys, how do they all stack up against each other?
All spectacular people or spectacular flyers. What was interesting was most of the Marine Medal of Honor recipients were fighter pilots, and they had sort of a common experience, and a lot of them were awarded the medal for actions in the Solomon Islands around Guadalcanal and all, which to secure Henderson Field on Guadalcanal and all. Whereas the Army pilots, most of their actions centered around New Guinea, and they weren't all fighter pilots. They were bomber awards and that sort of thing. And the Navy people, a lot of them flew off of carriers, but there were one Nathan Gordon received his Medal of Honor for flying a PBY and rescuing downed pilots under enemy fire off New Ireland. So there's a lot of variety among all of the recipients. There's 30 altogether.
Right.
And there's a lot of commonalities, but there's quite a bit of variety as well, and that was fascinating to me.
As a matter of fact, and I'm going to say this, but we don't have to talk about him right off the bat, but I definitely want to, before we finish our time together, talk about what to me was the most unique of the, we might consider, airborne troops that were, and that was Red Irwin and the who was in a B-29, and his story is kind of unique compared to the rest of them. Like you said, most of them are fighter pilots, but there are all kinds of people that are in here. Do we want to try to do it chronologically? Do we want to talk? Because sad to say, a lot of these guys, especially ones that racked up enormous flying victories, did not survive the war.
Yes, so, that's true. For various reasons, some of it because they've got a little too competitive for their own good, unfortunately.
Yeah.
To be a fighter pilot, one needs to be fairly aggressive.
Right.
And there was no shortage of that with most of these fellas. Yeah. Red Irwin actually is one I admire more than a lot of the others. What a spectacular piece of heroism he
yes.
performed.
Well, let's go ahead and talk about him, since he is the one that's kind of out of the ordinary in this very very interesting book filled with extraordinary people.
Yeah, he's the only B-29 crewman to receive the Medal of Honor during World War II. He was as you saw in his story, well, they were off Japan and he was to drop a flare to assemble the other B-29s in the flight, and somehow it kicked back and exploded inside the plane.
Oof.
A phosphorus flare, and they burn, I guess, at about 1,200 degrees Fahrenheit. It blinded him. It burned most of his face off. He groped around for it on the floor. And incredibly, he picked it up and carried it towards the front of the aircraft where the pilots were. And the plane was in a dive because the entire plane had filled with smoke. And he screamed for the co-pilot to open the window, and he threw it out, which it probably didn't last as long almost as it takes to describe it, but he was horribly, horribly burned. No one thought he was going to survive. They aborted the mission and flew back to Iwo Jima with him. He was conscious the whole way, which is incredible to me as well. They actually went to Hawaii to get his Medal of Honor. They wanted to give it to him before he succumbed.
Right.
Everyone believed he was doomed. Well, he survived and lived a really outstanding life down in Georgia, I think it was. Just a phenomenal story, a phenomenal man, phenomenal deed of courage.
Yeah,
he saved everyone on the aircraft. There's no question.
Wow. That to me, that's a great way to end the book, because that is a man who just was only thinking of his fellow crewmen and said, I got to get this thing out of here. It's destroying the plane. It could melt through and then get into the bomb bay and then we'd explode. So this is the only way to save everybody.
Yeah, it's just amazing. He couldn't see. He was blinded. He groped his way forward. He was clutching it to his chest. It was burning through his body. I have no, it's beyond my imagination how he was able to accomplish that.
Yeah.
Amazing person.
This is...
And just a regular guy. I mean,
yeah.
He was just a regular American guy.
Now, there was a fellow who was the only aviation ordnance man who received the Congressional Medal of Honor, and this is a fellow, this is the first guy in your book, this is John Finn, who was at Pearl Harbor.
Yes, well, he was at the Naval Air Station on the other side of the island from Pearl Harbor. Yeah, John Finn's an interesting character, too. He woke up with his wife in his billet, hearing planes going overhead, and then he heard shooting, and he went and said, he was the ordnance officer, and he said, who's doing all this shooting? Without notifying me, I'm the ordnance chief. And next thing he knows, there's a knock on the door, and his next-door neighbor's saying that the place was under attack. So John throws on his clothes, he runs down, he gets in his car, and he starts down the road driving the speed limit because he thought to obey orders, and next thing he knows, a Japanese plane comes flying over his head, and at that point he stepped on it. He realized what was going on. But he got down there and organized resistance to this air attack on the Naval Air Station, stood out in the middle of the open, it was basically a parking lot, with a machine gun on an improvised tripod, and fired at planes going overhead, and they were strafing him, and he was wounded multiple times, and he kept at it. He thinks he might have hit one of them. He's not sure, but he stuck to it. He was out there firing away.
Hmm. There's a Captain Henry Elrod who was on Wake Island, a part of what has been called the Lost Squadron. We're talking, in case you're just joining us, to Jim Hallis, who is the author of Flyboy Heroes, the story of the Medal of Honor recipients of the air war against Japan from Stackpole Books. Tell us a little bit about Hank Elrod. This is a pretty extraordinary story as well.
Yeah, Henry Elrod was an interesting character as well. I think he might have been, today we might say he was on the spectrum. He had highs, emotional highs and emotional lows as a kid. He was irrepressible. He was extremely energetic and all. He found it hard to concentrate. He was always a physical person, very action oriented. He dropped out of Yale. His father committed suicide. He dropped out of Yale and came home and he had a falling out with his family or his mother, and he ended up joining the Marine Corps as an enlisted man and kind of found his niche in the air wings. But he was kind of an irrepressible guy. He was hard to handle. He was so active and energetic, I guess, overly energetic. But he ended up on Wake with the Lost Squadron. Just before the war broke out, they were trying to reinforce these small islands, and really came into his own in combat. He wasn't the greatest peacetime Marine, I guess, but he was, when it came to fighting, he was right there.
Yeah.
They finally ran out of airplanes. They fought the Japanese off for days, for a couple of weeks actually, ran out of planes, and he was part of the ground force that tried to repel the Japanese, and he was killed during that. But just a great example, a hard-fighting Marine, and very interesting character.
Now, one of the stories in here, I was familiar with this story because of Paul Harvey. And those of us boomers who grew up listening to Paul Harvey, you probably know where I'm going with this. And this is the story of Lieutenant Edward Henry Butch O'Hare, and a name that is, there's a reason we remember his name, but it's not the reason we should remember his name.
Butch O'Hare. Well, the airport in Chicago is named after him.
Right.
Which is kind of interesting. But I'm sure hundreds of thousands of people walk through that airport all the time and have no idea who Butch O'Hare is.
Yeah, yeah.
One of the interesting things about a lot of these people are where they came from in civilian life.
Right.
And Butch O'Hare, his father owned dog tracks. And at the time, during the 30s, and organized crime was involved in that, and his father apparently was somehow involved with Al Capone, and the FBI got onto them, and the father, Butch's father, was providing information to the FBI, and Al Capone obviously ended up in jail for tax evasion, but apparently he ordered Butch O'Hare's father to be killed, and he was assassinated in a drive-by shooting in Chicago. Well, as a matter of fact, while Butch was undergoing flight training, Butch had been a Naval Academy graduate. His father, I think, wanted a better life for him and encouraged him to go to the Naval Academy, which he did. He turned out to be a superb flyer and all, but he came from an interesting background,
yeah.
Very wealthy.
He was one of those guys that was flying against the Japanese in the South Pacific. Seems like he was uh, trying He was trying to help the guys at Wake Island and was not successful. He was involved in a battle that included one of our main carriers, the Lexington, when it gets attacked by lots and lots of Japanese, and he's one of the fellows that is trying to save the Lexington by fighting off these guys. And
yes, very early in the war and in the Coral Sea, and he was flying. He and his wingmate were flying protection over the Lexington. Everybody else had gone off after another flight of Japanese planes, and another flight came in and had the Lexington at their mercy. And Butch O'Hare tore into them by himself and shot down most of them. Saved the Lexington, really.
And he gets a Navy Cross for that, which gets upgraded to the Medal of Honor. And he could have, at that point, just gone back home and helped raise money for war bonds and stuff, but that wasn't the way he was. And he went back into battle and was even recommended for a second Medal of Honor, which it gets downgraded to a Navy Cross, which is no small thing.
Not at all, no.
Particularly when he'd already had the Medal of Honor. So his story is quite remarkable. I know we would be remiss if we did not talk about the Jimmy Doolittle raid, which was certainly unique, where we have a Navy ship and we have Army flyers in something that had never been attempted.
Yeah, they weren't even sure. They weren't even sure when they got off Japan that it was going to work, because of the. They knew they could get off the carrier, or they felt they could get off the carrier with these planes, these B-20 Mitchells. But they knew they couldn't get back, and they would have to fly to China. One interesting thing about Jimmy Doolittle, by the way, which O'Hare reminds me of, Butch O'Hare. He didn't want the Medal of Honor. He thought that he was just doing his job. He tried to refuse it, and that wasn't going to happen. And Jimmy Doolittle also attempted to refuse his Medal of Honor, or decline it, I should say. But that wasn't happening. But the Doolittle raid in April 42, FDR wanted to hit back at the Japanese for Pearl Harbor, and the best way to hit back would be to do Tokyo, to bomb Tokyo. But they couldn't really get a carrier in close enough with naval aircraft on it. They didn't have the range to carry out a raid. And somebody came up with the idea of using medium bombers, Army bombers. If they could get them off the carrier deck, they had the range to get to Tokyo and then hopefully continue on to China, where they would land safely, hopefully, and all would be well. And Jimmy Doolittle was assigned to lead that raid. He organized it and led it. After organizing it, he wasn't about to be left behind.
Right.
he was a character too. He was a young, as a young flyer. He went into the service in World War I, and was quite a character. There's a story that he was chasing ducks with an airplane and crashed into a barbed wire fence at one point. But then he went on to MIT and earned a degree in aeronautical engineering and all. He was a very interesting, very smart man.
Yeah.
But physically very small, which surprised a lot of people because he was a giant even in the 30s as far as his reputation went for air race trophies and that sort of thing. He was really quite a man.
Should we talk about Pappy Boyington a little bit? A pretty well-known fellow, flew with the Chenault's Flying Tigers, and he had a real alcohol problem, and that seemed to be the reason that he got into most of the troubles that he did.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I mean, Pappy Boyington, when he in his book, he wrote his autobiography, he said, "Show me a hero, and I'll show you a bum." This is after he had the he received the Medal of Honor, and he was in school and before he went into the service. He was a really standout athlete, a champion wrestler in high school and college and all. But when he went through flight training, he developed a drinking problem, and it affected him his entire life. As a matter of fact, that's how he ended up in the Flying Tigers, because he owed so much money, and his marriage was on the rocks, and he thought they offered him good money to go to China and fly against the Japanese.
Right.
And really, that's how he ended up over there in the first place.
I remember the TV series Baba Black Sheep about the squadron he put together after he had flown with the Flying Tigers and was flying for the U.S. Marine Corps. And he sort of embellished his own legend, didn't he?
Oh, absolutely. He admitted it. He said himself he was a pathological liar. He was a character. But yeah, then the guys who flew with him hated this Baba Black Sheep TV show. It's, what in the world? What were you thinking of? And he apologized, said, oh, I needed the money, because they really weren't a bunch of misfits as portrayed in the TV show. They were good pilots. He scrounged up some good pilots, and he. If anybody was drunk in the air or on the ground, it was probably Pappy. Well, they called him Gramps, actually. The guys called him Gramps because of his advanced age. I think he was about 30.
Yeah, right. For a fighter pilot, that was an advanced age.
Yeah, he was a fossil as a fighter pilot. So. I kind of feel it's hard not to feel some compassion. He was irascible, but it's kind of hard not to feel sympathy for him, because he just could not beat this.
Yeah. Amazingly enough, he survived the war, and not all of these guys did. Like you said, there is a certain kind of internal structure that you have to have, I think, to be a fighter pilot. You have kind of have to almost believe you're indestructible, and at the same time know that you're not. But you can... I think that's how you can do the things these guys did, where they go diving into a situation that the odds are very, very good that they will not survive. And when they do survive, they're delighted and surprised and say, hey, well, let's try something else. You know?
Yeah. Well, Pat Boynton, he was shot down. He survived the crash in the water. He's floating around, and then he gets picked up by a Japanese submarine. and then they don't. They don't execute him for some reason, and they send him to Japan, and he survives the war. I mean, he talk about nine lives.
Yeah, yeah.
But as you say, with this aggressiveness in this, there's also a sense of responsibility that runs through a lot of these actions. Jefferson DeBlanc is a perfect example of that. He was assigned to escort a flight that was to bomb some shipping pretty far off of Guadalcanal. And he got into the air, and they got quite a ways along, and he realized that he had an airplane that was a gas guzzler. Matter of fact, the name of the airplane was Impatient Virgin, which I always thought was kind of kind of fun. But he knew he wasn't going to get back if he continued with this flight to protect these bombers, and he continued anyway because he felt that they were going to need his guns, that without him, they were going to lose aircraft, and it was his responsibility to protect this bomber formation. And he got out there, and sure enough, he was in all kinds of combat and shot down a lot of enemy aircraft that were attacking this bomber formation, saved some of them, or most of them. And he had no gas to get back. He started back, and as it turns out, he got shot down anyway. But the courage that it would take to say, well, I'm just going to parachute into the ocean when I run out of gas, and we'll see what happens. It's amazing, really.
With so many of these guys, the ones that were fighting to be the ace of aces, you mentioned the Marine Joe Fawcett was the first to break Eddie Rickenbacker's World War I record of 26 aerial victories.
Yeah.
But after that, there were a number of them. I know we're running close to the end of our time together, but they're all an extraordinary bunch, these guys that were they'd bump up to 25, and then they'd hear that, oh, such and such got 26. Oh, man, I got to go up and get two more, you know. And many of them didn't live to enjoy their records. Do you want to just quickly run through a couple of their names? I know we don't have time to tell all their stories.
Sure.
But we can encourage people to get a copy of your book, too.
Well, that would be good. That would be great. Yeah, well, Neil Kirby, an Army flyer, he flew P-38s, the fork-tailed Lightnings. He comes to mind. He was very anxious to break Joe Foss's record. It got him killed in the end because he just extended himself too far. Tommy McGuire also flew P-38s. He finished the war only. Well, he didn't finish the war because he was killed. But he accumulated. He would have beat Dick Bong's record of 40, which is the record for the war, the record number of kills for the war. But he got carried away. He got greedy. He took a chance he shouldn't have taken, hoping to beat Bong, and crashed his plane and was killed. So some of these people, they suffered from the competition after really could be deadly for them as well. They got carried away and took chances they shouldn't have taken in order to rack up a higher score than the next guy, and it just killed them.
Yeah, they are an extraordinary bunch, and so many of these people, really, other than two, I had three of them, including Pappy and O'Hare and Jimmy Doolittle, but the others I'd never heard of. And so I love learning about people who did extraordinary things and whose names need to be remembered, like Butch O'Hare's is, and Pappy Boyington, and Jimmy Doolittle. These are extraordinary people flying experimental planes sometimes or obsolete planes from time to time, and managing to do heroic and self-sacrificial things for their nation, but also for the guys that they were flying with or that they were serving with. And their stories are wonderful. Jim, anything else you wish that I'd ask you that I didn't neglect it to?
No, I would hope that the book helps these people to be remembered. They deserve to be remembered.
Yeah,
they're fine examples of courage and responsibility, and they deserve to be remembered.
Absolutely. Well, once again, our book, Fly Boy Heroes, The Stories of the Medal of Honor Recipients of the Air War Against Japan, from Stackpole Books, which is an imprint of Roman and Littlefield. Stackpole kind of specializes in these kind of wonderful book about people who serve in the military, not just ours, but in militaries around the world. And through the ages. And Jim, thank you again for making time to be with us today on The Bookshelf.
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity.
Our thanks again to Jim Hallis, the author of Fly Boy Heroes, The Stories of the Medal of Honor Recipients of the Air War Against Japan, from Stackpole Books. And you can check out stackpole.com and find out more about his book and about the other wonderful books that they have. We'll see you next time right here on your favorite radio station and podcast. Until then, I'm your host, Dave Doc Kirby. Thanks for listening, and God bless.